This is the son of PCJ.
This is London. This is London.
The Voice of Russia World Service.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
This is the Dutch World Broadcasting System in Hilversum, Holland, with a relay transmission via Bonaire in the Netherlands Antilles, directed from New Zealand.
This is Radio Prague, Czechoslovakia.
Ici Radio Canada. This is Canada.
Bonjour à vous si vous nous rejoignez sur Radio France Internationale. Il est 5h à Paris.
This is Radio Ukraine International.
This is the English program of Radio Deutsche Welle, Germany's international broadcasting service.
Media Network Plus, produced and presented by Paulette Macquarie and Keith Perron.
Well, hello, friends. It's very nice to have you with us once again on the program. Today, we turn our attention to Radio Canada International. On June 24th, RCI signed off on shortwave due to an 80% cut imposed on them by the CBC. That's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. Today, we're going to be joined on the program by Conservative Canadian Senator Hugh Siegel, who has brought this to the attention of the government and is pushing to have many questions answered as to why the CBC would cut RCI in the way it did. We have this and more, so stay tuned. This is Media Network Plus, the program that scratches at the surface to get the real answers. But first, here's Paulette Macquarie with a look at some of the headlines from the world of media.
BBC Worldwide Channels has unveiled two new additions to the slate of original productions for its BBC-branded portfolio around the world. The new programs are the first co-productions with the BBC's in-house team since the business announced plans last month to triple the number of original program hours ordered for its international service. In factual channel BBC Knowledge comes Dara O'Brien's Science Club, a new science magazine format hosted by the Irish comedian. Also ordered for BBC Lifestyle is an international version of the newly revived food and drink series fronted by the Michelin-starred chef Michael Rood Jr. Food and Drink is BBC Worldwide's first production for BBC Lifestyle. A businessman opposed to the Iranian regime launched a new television channel in London recently aimed at promoting democracy and freedom in the Middle Eastern state. At a press conference in the British capital, the channel's director and editor-in-chief, Ali Ashkar Ramezanpour, said Raha would be the first independent channel that belongs to Iranian people. There are channels in Persian, like BBC or Voice of America, but they are from other countries, not Iranian people, added Ramezanpour, a former deputy minister in the Ministry of Culture and Islamic Guidance. The channel is funded by Amir Hossein Jahanchahi, founder of opposition movement Green Wave. He outlined how the channel would challenge the regime of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Raha, which means to free in Persian, will employ 40 people in London and will also rely on a network of around 20 freelancers in Iran, according to its founders. Jahanchahi said Raha would be open to all opposition, reformist and non-reformist, to all people who want a different future for Iran. International satellite services provider Intelsat has blocked Iran's official broadcast channels in Europe, a company spokesman said last week. But it would not confirm or deny an Iranian report that it did so at the order of the U.S. government. Press TV, a unit of IRIB, said the channels that were shut down included Sahar, Jam-e-Jam, Islamic Republic of Iran News Network, and Al Kawsar. Press TV said that it was not among the channels removed. Satlink Communications has announced that it has been selected by six Nigerian TV channels for a new DTH service. Satlink will provide end-to-end broadcast services and content distribution to Central and Pan-Africa on the AMOS 5 satellite Ku-band and C-band platforms. Utilizing the AMOS 5 satellite on 17 degrees east, Central Africa Ku-band reach, Satlink will enable two international Christian religious channels, Voice of God and Champions of Fire TV, and Hola TV, a Nigerian entertainment channel, to effectively distribute content easily to direct-to-home viewers in the Western Africa, Eastern Africa, and Central African regions. For these and other news stories, visit the Kim Andrew Elliott blog. You can find a link to it at the PCJ website, www.pcjmedia.com. Just scroll to the bottom of the homepage and you'll find it there. That's the news and media for this week. I'm Paulette Macquarie.
All right, thank you very much, Paulette. And if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International, heard on the World Radio Network, Sky Digital, and Cirrus XM. At the beginning of today's program, I said our special guest today is Conservative Canadian Senator Hugh Siegel, who's brought the attention to the Canadian government, as well as many in the public, and is pushing to find answers. The answers being, why did the CBC, who had a cut of 10%, decide to cut RCI, that's Radio Canada International, by 80%? Now, for those who listen to this program on a regular basis, you may know that this past summer we reported that Radio Canada International was signing off on shortwave after 67 years. This was due to a cut imposed on them from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. A cut, I might add, of 80%. Yes, 80%. Leaves you wonder, why 80%? Well, a lot of people are asking this question. Somebody who is connected with the government, he's a Canadian senator for the Conservative Party, Hugh Siegel, has brought this attention to the Senate and is bringing up this attention with the Canadian government to find out why the CBC did this. Can they do it? Because Radio Canada International is an important tool for the Canadian government. Now, RCI has basically gone to an online service, which leads me and a lot of other people to ask the question, well, if you're doing, say, a program in Chinese, which they are, how can your target audience, which is China, listen to that online program? Because for many years now, over 10 years now, the Radio Canada International website has been blocked in China. Let's move ahead to October 31st, just a few days ago. All programs from the Sackville Relay in Canada were supposed to stop. Now, many of them, like China Radio International, KBS, Voice of Vietnam, and others, all stopped broadcasting before that date. The CBC International Service was supposed to sign off for good on October 31st. Just a few hours before going into the studio to record this program, one of our listeners, Mark Cody in Toronto, Canada, posted on his Facebook page that, well, the CBC Northern Service was continuing. I found that a little strange. And then not too long after, another one of our listeners, Thomas Witherspoon in the United States, posted on his site, swling.com, I just received that the Sackville, New Brunswick transmission site of Radio Canada International will continue broadcasting the CBC Northern Service on 9625 kHz until all the FM relays in Northern Quebec have been tested and placed into service. Now, I should mention here that the CBC applied to the CRTC to have all their call signs for those transmitters revoked, but they're still on the air. Thomas's posting goes on to say, the remaining staff at Sackville have converted the site to run two transmitters and two antennas for redundancy for the Northern Quebec service on the frequency that I just mentioned. Nothing else is being broadcast from our Sackville relay. And sure enough, Mark Cody sent us along a recording to show us that, yes, the CBC Northern service is still on the air. There we have it. The CBC Northern Service on 9625 kHz, as recorded by Mark Cody in Canada. I should mention, by the way, in case you didn't recognize the language is Cree. Well, we now move on to Canadian Conservative Senator Hugh Siegel. Our own Paulette Macquarie contacted him to find out how this was brought to his attention about RCI being basically turned off.
It was about the beginning of June when it became clear that the budgetary cut to the CBC of about 10% was going to be, in the case of Radio Canada International, translated into an 80% cut. So that right away twigged me to figuring out that this was an internal CBC decision, that RCI as a shortwave service didn't matter to them anymore. And that struck me as odd, and so it was, I think, around the 25th or the 26th of June that I put a motion on the order paper in the Senate. I did a bit of research before I did it, and the motion called for an inquiry before the Senate as a whole, and that's the motion that now sits on the Senate order paper. I've now spoken to it. A whole bunch of other senators are going to speak to it, and I hope it'll get voted on sometime in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
So Radio Australia, for example, they've got a budget of nearly $20 million, and they provide its target audience 24-hour service in English on shortwave to Asia, Southeast Asia, the Pacific. There's Chinese as well, Chinese to China on shortwave, and all these other services. And in fact, in the case of Radio Australia, they've increased their shortwave output. Now, and RCI is, for years, they've been consistently rated one of the top international broadcasters in terms of respect, but yet they're scaling back. What message is this, the shutting down RCI send out to the world?
Well, I think the message is being sent by CBC management, not by the government. The government is not happy about the decision that the CBC management made to shut down RCI effectively as a shortwave service. But as you know, we have a freestanding broadcasting act and a corporation and a Crown corporation, so they get to make their own decisions. But I think it's a decision by the CBC that they don't care about the shortwave receivership around the world. They don't care about the shortwave audience. And they're going with the kind of trendy call of sort of putting a little something on the Internet. But the problem is that part of what the effect of their 80% cut is that there won't be enough money for any formulated RCI programming that is aimed at taking different aspects of Canadian culture, politics, democracy, freedom of expression, creativity to the international community, or in languages the international community can understand. It'll just be kind of derivative repeater programming put out on the Internet. And part of our concern is that, when dictatorships in places like China don't like what's being put on the Internet, they are simply blocked. You can't block shortwave, but you can block the Internet. And when Egypt was going through its difficult times, the old junta just blocked the Internet from around the world. So we're basically giving up a reach which got us to 70%. There's 70% of the world's territory and people who have some access to shortwave, to an internet world which peaks in some of our target zones at 20% of the population might have access, or 40%. Middle East may have a little bit under 50%, but in many parts of the world it's far less than that, and it tends to be the wealthier people who have a computer and access or a shortwave. And yet, you find that both Grundig and the Chinese company that actually makes many of the shortwave radio sets that are sold around the world cannot keep up with demand. and CBC, in a completely nonsensical fashion, is walking away from that opportunity. It's just insane. It's self-centered. It is elitist. It is disengaged. And it is, by the way, betraying a long-term bias within the CBC that this 67-year-old service, which was part of our broadcasting during the war and all the rest, is no longer relevant. It's probably young people who are well-intentioned, but have just figured out that if it's not on the Internet, it doesn't matter. And that, of course, is not real world for millions of people worldwide.
So it's not really even fair to ask a question like, does Ottawa not believe in soft diplomacy anymore? You're saying the government's hands are tied here.
Yeah, the government, I mean, to be fair to the government, look, I'm a charter member of something called Friends of Public Broadcasting, which was put together in the early 80s to make sure that the then newly elected Conservative government treated public broadcasting with some respect. And during that government, they created two new networks for the CBC, English and French. They created a new state-of-the-art headquarters for CBC in Toronto. So we had some measure of success. This government would argue that, unlike any other G8 administration, we've increased the funding for the arts. We haven't decreased it. We have stayed on target. We believe in the cultural industries. But when you give the CBC a 10% cut, and that produces an 80% cut in RCI, that's a CBC decision for which I believe, while they have the freedom to make that decision, they need to be held accountable for why they made it and why they decided to continue what they started to do in 91, which is try to get rid of RCI, and people fought back then. I'm hoping people will fight back now.
So back in 91, then, what was the motivation? Because back in 91, the networks weren't on internet. It was just kind of something that was sort of on the fringe for university students or whatever. The business world, and particularly the media industry, was not yet on the internet.
I think the CBC, for some time now, when looking at things like local broadcasting and local news and the unbelievable amount they invest in hockey, which gets them quite a serious return when there is hockey, have decided that, you know, RCI was one of those things from the Cold War and whatever that we don't need and it's not necessary. I read out a list in the chamber, in the Senate the other day, of a whole bunch of countries who have always had many more hours of broadcast than we have. And, you know, some of them are countries that are by no means as wealthy or as established as we are as a broadcasting authority. And so it just says that CBC has had an internal bias. And so when this last 10% cut came, I think they said, this is our chance to shut the baby down. And they protest on their website. They haven't shut it down. They just put it on internet. But when they don't have any dedicated programming and they are removing its access to 70% of the world, that is a de facto shutdown. And it's now just a repeater station for derivative programming from other parts of the service, which is going to mean that its listenership or its viewership or whatever you call it on the internet will just diminish even further. So I think that there is a chance of parliamentarians from all affiliations, and I think I'll get support from both sides. We may even find that the motion is amended so that there be a full committee hearings, and not just a couple of days before the bar of Parliament, but in fact a full committee hearing for the Communications and Transportation Committee of the Senate, which would allow us to bring in a lot of the supporters of RCI, some of the former employees. We could bring in by teleconference people who run other international services around the world. And I'm one of those who thinks that it ain't over till it's over. And if you keep on fighting, you can sometimes get a bit of a surprise.
Good for you. But however, the Sackville transmitters are shutting down. And the CRTC just gave CBC permission just about a day or two ago to revoke the call letter. So you don't think it's too late?
All those things can be reversed. I think the transmitter, let me tell you this about the transmitter. The transmitter was, before they began to dismantle it, absolutely state-of-the-art. In fact, new technology was applied in the last 24 months to give it a new remote capacity that did not heretofore exist. And, of course, the guys doing the dismantling wouldn't know that. There's been no consultation with the local community in Sackville, who are quite angst-ridden about this. There have been others who had some interest, private sector and others, to make use of it for international broadcasting. CBC has indicated they have no interest. So clearly we have a clique or a cabal that is determined to shut this service down. And I am determined to do everything we can, at least in the upper chamber and if not elsewhere, to make them reconsider before it's too late. We can't stop what they're doing, except they'll be accountable for what they did. And they'll be accountable for what authorization they got, whether they made the minister aware or did not make the minister aware. And I'm told that the minister is not particularly happy about any of this. So we're gonna keep the flag flying and keep focusing on it. And at some point, maybe the folks at CBC will stop looking in the mirror and look out the window and decide there's a little bit of public service here they might want to actually consider.
So can you speak to two questions here? First of all, how will they be accountable, and who are they? I mean, who are they, the senior
executives?
Well,
it's basically the CBC board and the CBC senior management who had to approve these plans. And so they're the ones who should be held accountable, number one. Number two, they're held accountable by being brought before an open committee in front of the full media and the public, where they are asked normal, rational questions about why they did this, what options did they consider, did they have any lesser option other than a total shutdown, what work did they do with respect to the internet reach, all that stuff, and the quality of their answers will determine how credible their decisions are. And if, as I believe, we will find an immense anti-RCI bias and a kind of technological snobbery about the holiness of the internet that will betray a certain arrogance which will produce a backlash. And in the end, however arrogant some in the CBC may be, they are a public broadcasting network who have some responsibility, in fact, to take into account public views. And all you can hope, frankly, is that Canadians who share this concern can separate out their affection for many parts of the CBC's work, which I certainly share, from a focus on a particular decision which was unhelpful, unconstructive, unpatriotic, and in my view, a dilution of Canada's global presence. And then you hope that they will reconsider. But, you know, you have to create the format and the forum within which that arrogance becomes apparent, and that's what we are trying to do.
You mentioned the arrogance at CBC, that the internet is sacrosanct and that's the way to go and shortwave is outmoded. I have had discussions with other people who are maybe not in the industry but are interested in it, and they're actually saying the same thing. Do you think the Canadian public would be on board? Do you think they really care? Do they even know much about shortwave and RCI being on shortwave and what that means?
Well, part of the challenge that you face, of course, when you have a service that is outward bound, aimed at listeners around the world, is that there may or may not be a constituency for that inside the country itself. We all listen to the CBC on our radios and televisions and get it online, all the rest, and that's great and easy for us. And I think if you do not array for Canadians what some of the consequences are, and array just some of the facts that you were so kind to start the interview with, namely Australians are advancing, various other people are advancing and broadening their reach. These are not dumb countries. These are not countries who don't have distinguished broadcasting services like the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and others. Why would they be doing this? Why do they think it's in their interest? Why do they think it's vital in terms of Australia's global presence? Why would we think it's less vital? So you have to construct a process of inquiry where you have witnesses who you know will be resonant with Canadians, who will explain why they've taken a different choice. And you can't assume that just because one senator or a bunch of senators decides to have an inquiry, that in and of itself will kind of supercharge public opinion on this issue. You have to work at it with facts and figures. You have to work at it with personalities and witnesses and testimony, which makes a compelling case. So I don't assume that this is going to be easily done. I think it's going to be an uphill battle. But, you know, I was taught by my mother that most things that are worthwhile are hard. And if they were easy, then they wouldn't be all that worthwhile. So this will be an uphill battle. But for something as important as this, for something that brought the message of Canada in Ukrainian and a whole bunch of other languages around the world, and where people got not just, this is not Radio Free Europe. This is not the Voice of America. CBC, and I know because I used to participate the odd time in interviews, RCI would talk about the dissent that might be going on in Canada on a particular issue. They would talk about why a government of the day was not terribly popular on a particular social or other related policy. In other words, they portrayed the full breadth of what an open pluralist democracy with a strong sense of cultural creativity and individual freedom and a sense of a collective aspiration on important things really meant. That was the message and the promise of Canada. And if you look at a lot of where people want to come to Canada from, they come to parts of the world which don't have, they come from parts of the world, Southeast Asia, for example, India, Pakistan, and some parts of Africa, who don't have great internet access but have always had access to shortwave, and where they've been able to hear about Canada through part of the work done by RCI. So, you know, if you don't array those facts and if you don't array those realities and those qualities and those benefits, then you're right. We won't get Canadians engaged, but I think we have a duty to try.
That was Conservative Canadian Senator Hugh Siegel speaking to our own Paulette McQuarrie. Now, if you want more information on this and the other actions taking place to restore RCI's budget, I invite you to check out the website for the RCI Action Committee. The URL is www.rciaction.org. That's www.rciaction.org.
Call the PCJ answer line at country code 44-20-3286-1399. That's country code 44-20-3286-1399 and leave your comments and questions. On shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is PCJ Radio.
I should mention, of course, if you leave a message on our answer line, we may use it on the program. Well, it's now time to turn our attention to propagation and what we can expect over the next 7 days. Here's our propagation editor, Dan Hensley.
The 10.7-centimeter flocks will be 100 on November 3rd and 4th, November 5th, 105, November 6th, 110, November 7th, 115, November 8th and 9th, a 10.7-centimeter flux of 120. The A index will be 8 on November 3rd, November 4th through November 7th, an A index of 5. The A index spikes at 10 on November 8th, spiking again on November 9th at 20. The KP index starts out at 3 on November 3rd. From November 4th to November 7th, a KP index of 2. November 8th, a KP index of 3. November 9th, the KP index rises 1 point to become 4. Sunspots 1596 and 1600 are passing out of view this week, with 1598 and 99 in view. No large coronal holes on the solar disk this week. The magnetic canopy of a sunspot group just over the sun's southwestern limb slowly erupted on October 28th. When the hours-long eruption was over, a bright arcade formed over the blast site, marking the location where the explosion occurred. Arcade loops appear after many solar flares. It's how the magnetic fields of sunspots settle down after a significant eruption. The particular eruption hurled a massive coronal mass ejection into space, but Earth was not in the line of fire. The explosion was indeed photogenic, but not geo-effective.
Thank you very much, Dan. Well, guess what? We're now out of time once again. If you wish to contact us to let us know what you think of the program, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com, and you can listen to this program again as well as all past editions by going to the website www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus, all one word. So on behalf of Dan Hensley and Paulette McCrory, this is Keith Powell wishing you well, hoping that we'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73s to you all, and 88 to the ladies.